Hello and welcome to The Enthusiast, the internet's premier hit-free zone, a one-stop shop for entertainment. Every week or thereabouts, we'll go through what we're currently enjoying in the worlds of film, TV, music, games, comics, and general pop culture. I'm your host, the Big Bad Wolf, Kieran Shiak, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the Woodsman, Sean Keeney.
And with every podcast, the following show will contain swearing, spoilers, and some incredibly fairy tale jokes.
I do think you suit the Woodsman with your big Woodsman-y beard.
And I do always wear checkered shirts, which...
That's true. So how have you been this week?
Oh, I've been so tired. I for some reason, decided that yesterday I was going to do as much work as possible. Not a good idea. I feel like crap today. But other than that, I've been working my ass off. Got a few things in the pipeline. Should be fun. How have you been?
I've been all right. Can't complain. Been working... uni stuff. It's getting a bit, bogging me down a bit. But I can't complain. Have a nice day seems to be taking off fairly well. Got some downloads from Sweden.
Wow.
So that was exciting.
I do love how, I love seeing what international like listeners that we get on any podcast. Like yeah. When we check the views and it's just like, oh, six people from India downloaded the podcast. It's like, how did you find the show? And like, why are you listening? Mm. But thank you regardless.
Yeah. So it's been a rough week, especially having to watch WrestleMania 6.
Yeah, I read your feature. You are kind of like a masochist for it.
I know that if I keep going, I'll get to the good stuff. WrestleMania 10 isn't that far away. But it's been good. I got a care package from Robert Newsom, who is the man I interviewed for the first episode of Have a Nice Day, which features all of the issues of his zine, as well as posters, flyers, badges, stickers, just this massive package full of stuff. It was fantastic. So that was a nice thing to get in the post yesterday.
Yeah, so anyone we interview in future, you know where to send it us.
But yeah, that's, pretty much it's been a very slow week. I don't really remember what I've been doing day to day. I was ill on the weekend, I remember that very well.
Well, we've been really busy as well with stuff for the show. Like, I know you've swamped yourself in a few things we're going to talk about, even though you're now doing two podcasts, uni and everyday life.
Yeah, and 2.5 articles.
Jesus, we're the things we do for you people. But we're going to move on to news.
What's all the shouting? So I think I've got something you'll have either heard of or you'll be very excited by.
Or both, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you've heard of it, you are excited by it. Doctor Who, next season. Do you know?
No, I don't.
Directing the first two episodes.
Oh, yes, I know.
Directing the first two episodes of the new season of Doctor Who starring Peter Capaldi is one of our favourite directors, Ben Wheatley.
I am pretty excited to see what he can bring to this, because let's just say I've not really seen Ben Wheatley do something that accessible,
yeah,
way to put it.
Family friendly.
Yeah, so this might be one of the most dark and gruesome Doctor Who episodes we've ever.
That's what I've been hearing. It's a very dark take on the Doctor with Peter Capaldi. It's not going to be light-hearted rubber Matt Smith.
Do you know what I have to say to that? Good, because I'm getting... I like Matt Smith and I like David Tennant, but that's who's getting far too whimsical. It's getting really, really kind of child-friendly, and I miss the kind of older Doctor Who's where it was just dark. Like, there's some grim shit in Doctor Who.
I thought there was some dark stuff in the last season. That one where the Doctor gives that big speech to the planet that was exploding, I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, that was probably the best episode of last season for me, personally, because it got too villain of the week. It got very procedural, and it would kind of bug me. So the fact that they've got a new Doctor, an older Doctor, and they're getting darker established writers for the show, I'm looking forward to it. I'm interested to see where they go with this.
I do like that after it was announced to Peter Capaldi, a lot of people online were saying, let's see the teenage girls like try and fancy him. And Tumblr just went, challenge accepted.
Did you see, like, that was one of the things I actually spent quite a bit doing, is after the announcement there was a lot of live reactions on YouTube, and a lot of it was teenage girls just like, oh my god, who is it? Who is it? Oh, what is that? And it's like, oh, come on.
So I've seen a lot of fan art on Tumblr of Pierre Capaldi as, like, sexy older gentleman.
God, like, think about it. The man's done... He's done a lot of stuff in his life. Like, he's been in a Brad Pitt blockbuster movie. He was in a punk band once with Craig Ferguson. He's done a lot. And, come on, the man's earned it.
Yeah, but I think he's going to get a big, strong reaction and a big, strong reception.
Because amidst these reaction videos that I was watching, there was quite a few with more middle-aged girls, not the teenage girls, on the YouTube channels.
So women?
Yeah. But you could tell they were a bit more passionate about Doctor Who than the sort of bandwagon status.
I don't want to say that anyone is a bandwagon fan.
Yeah, because obviously...
I think all forms of fandom are accepted. If you like something, it doesn't matter why you like it. It doesn't matter when you got into it. I don't really want to be assigning...
That's a valid point. It's just annoying that now people are not, like, are boycotting the show because it's not a young, handsome lead. Like, because that's now a thing, believe it or not, because a lot of these teenage fans are not a fan of the looks of Capaldi, so they're decided to not watch the... Although, admittedly, can you imagine owning an action figure of Capaldi?
I can't wait to get an action figure. I've not considered that. I'm definitely buying a piece of Capaldi action figure.
It'll look like it's been slightly melted. They'll just melt some, like, David Tennant ones and just put it out there.
Paint his hair grey.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with Doctor Who, like, and seeing what other writers they end up getting. Stephen King, Neil Gaiman.
They've had Neil Gaiman already.
Well, even more. Lars von Trier would make an interesting Doctor Who episode.
Neil Gaiman has done 2 episodes so far.
I remember that, actually. Like, they approached Guillermo del Toro, didn't they, recently to do one, but...
I'm not sure what... He probably said, yeah, I'll do it.
Oh, no, it wasn't Guillermo del Toro. It was Peter Jackson said he wanted to do an episode of Doctor Who. As long as it's set in the set of Braindead, we'll be fine. But I'm going to move on to quite a bit of video game news that we've got this week. First one, short but sweet. Mass Effect 4 is happening, but not as we maybe know it. BioWare have actually come out and confirmed that, yes, we're working on Mass Effect 4, but it's not going to be a Commander Shepard story.
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Shepard. Shepard is me. That's the whole point of the game. But, like, Shepard's done.
Yeah, do you know what the best thing about this news is? All good things are trilogies. Once it's a trilogy, that's it wrapped up. Do a new story, which I hope they do with Assassin's Creed 4, because I don't know what's the story with that at the minute.
See, I agree with that trilogy thing, but the Assassin's Creed trilogy that's good is...
The Ezio.
Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Assassin's Creed
that's
Revelations.
That's a fair point.
That's a trilogy.
Well... It'd be interesting because I've not heard anything about, like, who's playing the character in the Animus for Assassin's Creed 4.
It's someone that works in Abstergo.
Because I'm not going to spoil Assassin's Creed 3, but let's just say it's probably not going to be Desmond. And if it is, then the fucking timeline is skewed.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it's someone that works for Abstergo.
Okay, that should be interesting. But Mass Effect 4 is happening. It's more than likely.
Garrus.
None of the characters from the originals are going to be in, I'm afraid. None of, they've said Commander Shepard and all of his friends are not in it. Like, sorry, no more Garrus. He might turn up as like a cameo.
I want my Garrus spin-off game. Do you remember that Punisher game on PS2?
Yeah, the really
violent
one.
The really dark, violent, good Punisher game on PS2.
Yeah.
I want that set on Omega in between Mass Effect 1 and 2. With Garrus as Archangel.
I can say that.
Because that's what Garrus did in between Mass Effect 1 and 2. He went and became the Punisher.
He walks around with a big skull t-shirt on.
But like a skull, like a Tyrion skull. Not a human skull.
This sounds awfully a lot like we're going to make this into a comic book or something. But that's some quick news about Mass Effect. We'll move on now to some worse news in video games. Ubisoft have annoyed... pretty much everyone who's been looking forward to next gen get consoles like the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Sorry, yeah. I actually didn't mean to laugh at that.
Yeah, you did. Don't lie. By delaying possibly the most anticipated game release for the launch titles of both those consoles, Watch Dogs has been pushed back to
Spring 2014?
It's, yeah, quarter two of 2014 for a speculated release, they put. They've also pushed back Racing Game The Crew, which was going to be out maybe, I think, December. That's now like September next year. And I'm like, if this is just for Uplay, then fuck you, Ubisoft.
I don't really understand what Uplay is.
No one understands what Uplay is. It's basically, it's like a point system where you can spend it on costumes and stuff. So, you, for example, if you're playing like Assassin's Creed, you get Uplay points, then you go to another game and you can spend the points there. It's like a currency for Ubisoft games. And it's pointless. It's like no one cares.
Pointless.
No one really cares about it. But the reason that Ubisoft...
That was your best pun yet, and you just rolled straight past it.
It's subconscious nowadays. But the reason that they've come out and said that they've delayed Watch Dogs, especially, which... Did you hear about how much their stock dropped after the... No. Like, it was like 20% their stock dropped just at the announcement that they're pushing Watch Dogs back. But the reason they've come out and said is they wanted Watch Dogs to be... like the pinnacle of what they believe next generation gaming should be. So they decided to kind of keep at it, keep working on it until they personally believe it's suitable for their claims of next generation.
I'd rather have a good game than a rushed game.
Yeah, do you know what I love that being called for, though? It was broken. Like, someone got to a point later in the game and there wasn't a door or something. Like, the game doesn't work. We need this to be next generation! It's like, yeah, Ubisoft, you fucked up. But let's talk about some things that are out now and that work fully functionally. Let's move on to some reviews.
I'm gonna do it. I don't care.
Favourite artist?
I don't care, I'm gonna do it. On Saturday evening, for the hardcore fans who pre-ordered their album months and months in advance, Los Campesinos individually emailed the pre-order copies of their new album, No Blues, to every single fan who pre-ordered. And I got mine pretty early because I pre-ordered it straight away, obviously. Yeah. And it's all I've been listening to.
Like, I know they're a really popular band, but I have a really funny image in my head of them just emailing you. It's just like, how many emails do we have to send out? Oh, it's Kieran.
But from what I saw on Twitter, Gareth was up to like 4 a.m, like sending out emails, making sure everyone got a copy of the album. And it's so fucking good. I'm going to play the second single, which I did mention last week now. It's called Avocado Baby. And this is what it sounds like. Song on the album is just one that I reckon we could actually get to play. considering the album only, it's not really out yet. It's pre-orders are out, so
yeah, it's like the single that they put out, like the promo, like the representation of the album can be summed up mainly by the song.
My favorite album, my favorite song at the moment is a track called "Gloomy." That's not gloomy, gloomy.
Oh, right. I was gonna say, like, that sounds pretty negative,
but they play with that in the song. They play with gloomy, gloomy. In the it's a really good song. Probably my song of the week next week, to be honest.
Just lost. Welcome to Los Campesinos month.
Podcastesinos.
No, let's just stop there. I'm at a loss for words for that.
And I'm aware that a lot of people aren't a fan of Los Campesinos. So all of my friends make fun of me.
I like them. Yeah, I'm not going to make fun of you.
Yeah, I know.
There's other things I might do, but not this.
Yeah, a good portion of my friends make fun of me for liking them and they don't understand why they're my favourite band. And I think it's a valid point. I understand where people are coming from when they say they're not that good. Well, not that good, but why they say they don't like them.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the criticisms about the music are valid to a point. It's just, I like what they don't.
Yeah, just, it ticks your boxes.
Yeah. And I've had to deal with that pretty much all my life. I was a My Chemical Romance fan when I was a kid.
Yeah, when you were a kid, yes.
Yeah, well, I was when I was a kid, and I am now.
Yeah.
So it's always something that you have to kind of... I've always been a fan of bands that you kind of have to explain.
Yeah.
Why you're a... You can't just say... It's not just like, you say, oh yeah, I like Oasis.
You're on the cliff's edge with a lot of your music taste.
Yeah, it's either... It's just stuff that people don't really understand. Even with stuff like Girls Aloud.
Yeah.
I say Girls Aloud, one of my favourite bands, and people... We'll say, oh, it's because you think they're fit.
Or they turn the podcast off right now.
Third favourite band in Girls Aloud. Till I die. This Los Campesinos album, it's 10 tracks long. It's about 40, 45 minutes. And it's just so good. And the evolution of the band, they sound nothing like they did with Hold On Now Youngster or We're Beautiful, We Are Doomed. But you can see the evolution. And yeah, obviously, they're a different band. They've only got, I think, 3 original members of the 7 that... were there for Hold On Now Youngster.
Yeah, we've talked about like the evolution a lot on the show because like each album's got like different emotions behind it, and you can kind of trace it as it goes along.
Yeah, I like the misleading nature of the title because it's called No Blues, so you kind of think it's a juxtaposition to the last album, Hello Sadness.
Yeah,
but then the track that the title comes from is from the lyric, "There is no blues that could sound quite as heartfelt as mine."
It's
typical Los Campesinos stuff in a way.
It's just play on words, sort of thing.
But I think it comes out next week. I'm not sure. I've already got it. It's great.
Humble brag.
Yeah, humble brag. No, I'm not even humble bragging. I'm straight up bragging.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see them on... It's the only date that I know of all the things we're going to see, except for the thing tonight, which I know I'm going to that. I know on December 6th I'm going to go see Los Campesinos. I've got a big pre-order bundle coming soon. And I'll probably speak about the album some more next week.
So that was Los Campesinos, and fuck all you people who can't get the album yet. But you just mentioned bands that you've always been a fan of, and that's a good way to move on to a release that came out this week, which I'm going to talk about. Newfound Glory have released their first ever live CD, which for a band that have admittedly been around for quite some time, the fact that they've not done a live album... It's kind of weird to me, because I would have presumed there would have been one somewhere along the lines.
Yeah.
It's called Kill It Live, and this is the song Understatement from that album.
Hoping for a chance to
that was Understatement, originally from the Sticks and Stones album. Kill It Live was recorded in California, I think like a couple of months ago. And it just captures how energetic and lively the band are, and how much it captures how much fun they have in their live show, which is something I find usually lacking in a lot of live albums. Like, you get live albums and it's just, okay, you're just recording yourself going through the motions. Like, it's just, like, it's just another live show with recorded, like, you've pressed record on a typical live show that you're just going to turn up to. But Kill It Live just captures how fun the band are. And it's just good to see a band that have been around for 20 plus years who still, to this day, like each other and like the songs they play. Because on the album, they get to Hit or Miss, which is off their first album, which is about, I think, about 15 to 20 years. Song. It's old song. And it's admittedly a very, very basic pop punk song. But just like before they play it, Chad from the band's just saying, this riff, we made this riff and we decided that we're going to make a song around this. And to this day, no matter how many thousands of times, and this is probably the 250,000th time I've played this song, I still love playing this song for people like you, and I just love this band. And it's just good to see that sort of attitude to music.
Cause, enthusiasm.
Yeah, I'm so tired of just, because I like seeing bands live, especially the ones that have older songs that admittedly they're not huge fans of these days. Like, a good example is when I saw Panic at the Disco a couple of years ago when they came on with I Write Sins, and they were just like, we hate this song, we don't really, we obviously have to play it, but we hate playing it. And they just throw it out to the wolves, like they can't be bothered to play it, but they have to because it's a contractual agreement. But Kill It Live is a really fun album. It captures exactly why I love this band and why I love pop punk at the minute.
Yeah, I really enjoy live albums. One of my favourite albums of all time. It's not actually an album. It was never officially released. But someone put together the final LCD Sound System concert.
Oh, yeah.
And they separated it in track by track by track and put it up for download. So I got that and I listened to that all the time. Some of my favourite versions of those songs. But I remember when I saw Franz Ferdinand in 2010.
I don't know why you're looking at me. I don't know the answer.
I think it was 2000. Yeah, it would have been 2009 because I bought the ticket. That doesn't matter. but after the show, they were offering that concert on CD.
Oh, I think I remember. Like, there's been a few bands. An example of a band that played Manchester, and as soon as the show were finished, they gave out a disc of that show they've just performed. Alexis on Fire did that in Manchester, and like that is now considered a live album that you can get, even though it was just a gig they played and recorded.
Yeah, I remember thinking, oh well, and they said they were doing that at every show, so I thought, oh, that's the way the industry's going. That's really cool. And I expected to see it at more and more gigs, and I've never seen it since. Which is really surprising, because it seems like a good thing to have at a merch table. You enjoyed the concert, you go have a look at the merch. Oh, there's the concert you just enjoyed for a fiver on just a blank CD.
It depends how much they charge for it, because it could end up just being like the business of getting on a roller coaster and getting a photo of you on the roller coaster for about £25. But
if it's something that's about £5, I think that's more than reasonable.
I doubt it'll be about £5.
Well, the bands I see.
Well, yeah, because you could probably just ask the band that you see if you can record it yourself. But we're going to move on now to Kieran talking about television.
I've been watching the trashiest, most terrible, awful TV show, and I love it to bits. It's the best thing I've seen. It's Sleepy Hollow, and I love it. It's great. Do you know Sleepy Hollow is traditionally the Headless Horseman, Ichabod Crane, all that sort of stuff. You know Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
You've seen Tim Burton did one, I think? Or?
Yes, it was Tim Burton. Johnny Depp played Ichabod Crane. Yeah. It's a good movie.
Yeah. Well, this one, Ichabod Crane dies fighting the Headless Horseman. Well, he beheads the horseman, and then he gets hit with the horseman's axe and he dies, and he wakes up in a grave and wanders out into the street and nearly gets hit by a car.
Wow.
And he's been in this grave for 250 years, because it turns out his wife was a witch as part of this secret witch coven that was trying to stop the end of the world, because the headless horseman is death. Okay. And there are three other horsemen coming.
The horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yes.
Oh dear. So I didn't know that this was set in modern times. Yeah. So is this just another one of those, we're going to just get one random character from like fictional history and just slap him?
It's time...
Is it set in New York?
No, it's set in Sleepy Hollow.
All right, fair enough. That makes sense.
It's time travel comedy plus like Sherlock plus like Assassin's Creed, secret brotherhoods fighting each other plus Revelations. It's amazing.
Yeah, like... all those things you described are good.
Yeah, and so is this, but it's terrible at the same time. I love it, I can't get enough of it.
Like, someone described this to me, like, them trying to weirdly sell it to me. Like, I know, I've heard so many bad things about Sleepy Hollow. I've heard it's so good, it's bad, and I might check it out. Someone described it's got a very National Treasure-style vibe to
yes.
it.
Yes, yes.
Like, apparently it's, we need to solve this mystery, so let's go, do-do-do, like, proper whimsical, but yeah. a bit... dumb.
It's ace. It stars Tom Meissen as Ichabod Crane, with Nicole Beharie as Lieutenant Abby Mills. And I love that Ichabod Crane can't get out of that habit of calling a lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
And just the fun things of him being confused by a car, or she gives him a gun and he fires one shot and throws it away.
Okay. That's admittedly quite funny. It's like, it's good to see they're getting this all out of the way before they could have done it in a Captain America sequel.
It's a lot of fun, and they're going to some interesting places with the mythology, because the main villain is Moloch, who is a Lucifer-type demon who tried to overthrow heaven and is now coming to Earth. And it goes into different aspects of mythology. One of the villains in one of the early episodes is the Native American version of the Sandman.
Okay.
Which is a really creepy, just kind of Slenderman-ish type dude who comes at you like Freddy Krueger when you're sleeping. So they have to, like the Simpsons, go into
the dream world,
to fight him.
Okay. That's original.
But it's good, it's fun. And the effects honestly are really good. For a procedural like villain of the week TV show, the effects and the special effects budget is really, really impressive.
It's impressive in itself that we now live in an age where if something is recognised as terrible, but Sleepy Hollow has had some huge ratings because of how bad it is, apparently. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty certain they've just signed on like a second season.
God, I hope so.
Because, people love crap, and we like talking about it as well.
Yeah, one of the bits of the story is in Revelations. There's a passage about there will be two witnesses who will suffer through 7 years of trials.
Oh, so you're talking about like the actual biblical book?
Right? Yeah.
When you said Assassin's Creed and then Revelations, I thought you just meant Assassin's Creed Revelations.
No. It's got Assassin's Creed stuff in it, and then the Book of Revelations stuff.
Ah, okay.
So there's this bit about there will be two witnesses who will endure 7 years of tribulations.
Trials and tribulations.
Yeah. But while they try and save the world, and that's Ichabod Crane and Abby Mills. And there's a really interesting dynamic between Abby and her sister, because when they were kids, they saw Moloch in the woods, and Abby denied it, and her sister Jenny like said, this is what I saw, and Jenny went to a mental asylum.
Yeah.
And now Abby's having to deal with the fact that her sister wasn't crazy,
like the guilt side of it.
Yeah. And her sister's kind of this odd freedom fighter Lara Croft Tomb Raider that because the sheriff of the town, played by Clancy Brown, believed in this demon stuff, and he had this like hidden room in the sheriff's office where he had like papers and maps and stuff, and he was sending Abby's sister all around the world finding evidence about this. And it's a really interesting cast of characters. It's a very diverse cast of characters. Abby and her sister are black. John Cho's in it occasionally as like a semi-recurring bad guy, and he's Asian. And there's just, I was reading a really good interview. It sounds really gimmicky when I say it, but I was reading an interview with the showrunners about how they said having a diverse cast was one of the most obvious things for us to do because it's a diverse world and we're doing a disservice if we don't. And then I was reading some stats about how ethnically diverse shows have higher ratings these days.
Yeah, because there's more people to kind of, there's more characters to relate to, I guess.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking a lot about representation recently. About, I think Miles Morales is a great example.
Yeah.
There's a really good essay about by a black father who talks about tearing up when his dad saw, when his kid saw Miles Morales and said, he's like me.
Oh, that's sweet. So then all these racist people, as soon as that story came, I was like, I don't want no black Spider-Man. It's like, you don't even read comics. Just leave it. Jesus Christ. It's like when Superman denounced his American citizenship and the world, well, America went mental.
But Sleepy Hollow, it's so good. It's so much fun. It's just fun. They'll just say something and you'll just burst out laughing with how ridiculous it is and how straight their face is.
I presume that's unintentionally funny.
I don't know, because
It's so goofy that
it's kind of tongue in cheek at times. It's not like Troll 2.
Yeah.
It's not just so bad.
Well, I hope it's not like Troll 2. I hope nothing is ever like Troll 2 again.
Yeah, it's not like so bad it's good. It is genuinely a fun watch. I think they know what they're doing. It's like, you know, with old Batman 66.
Okay.
When you're a kid, it's just goofy, but when you're older you realise that this is a show made by adults. They're not oblivious. They're not idiots. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Self-aware.
Yeah. It's not as goofy as Batman 66, but it's got that same sense of, it's not idiots writing idiotically. It's people writing a specific show, and they know what they're doing.
Like, there's an intent to what they're doing. See, there's always going to be one thing missing from this Sleepy Hollow, and that's Christopher Walken was the Headless Horseman in the movie, so he was an awesome Headless Horseman.
Well,
I'm going to miss that.
The Headless Horseman in this, you don't actually ever see his head.
Yeah, kind of makes sense.
Because he wears like this big gimp mask. I think it's his head chopped off and the head's gone.
Like, of all the things that the media and modern television has tried to make sexual, it's the Headless Horseman.
No, he's a fucking big hench dude.
Oh, I want to see like just a wrestling match with him now. Mm. Just the word hench used to describe a literature character.
He's fucking hench, look at him. But Sleepy Hollow, go watch it. I think 5 episodes so far. So much fun. I'm going to say it again. Time travel comedy plus Sherlock plus Assassin's Creed, Secret Brotherhoods fighting each other. There's like the good witches and the bad witches and the Hessians and all sorts. And then the Book of Revelations, like apocalypse fiction with demons and shit. It's great.
So that was Sleepy Hollow. Watch at your own peril, I guess.
Yeah. Just watch it, it's great.
But we're going to move on to some video games now. I'm going to talk quickly about a game which certainly caught my attention this week. That is The Stanley Parable. The game started out originally as a Half-Life mod, but they've now developed it into a full, I'm not sure if game's the right word, but experiment. It's its own thing, which is quite interesting. And The Stanley Parable, it's about a man named Stanley. That's who you're playing. And there's a mysterious narrator who's kind of summarising the events of Stanley's life. He's an office worker. He presses buttons all day. Doesn't question it. He's very content with his life. Until one day, Stanley realises that there's no work for him to do. So he goes out of his office and everyone has vanished. Everyone in the entire building has vanished. So there's a little bit of a mystery. And the narrator is saying, Stanley, you're going to need to find out where everyone's gone. And it's kind of typical video game sort of thing to begin with. Like, you're walking along and the narrator's like, Stanley came to two doors. So he entered the one on his left. And there, Like, that is the point where you realise, okay, this is not your typical video game.
Can you enter the one on the right?
You can. And the Stanley Parable, the best part of this game is that whenever it comes to a decision, the narrator tells you what the decision you should really be making is. But we know how video gamers are. You're not going to listen. And it's like a stately British guy as well. The narrator is it's a great voice that they've got for it. And say you don't enter the room on the right. And he's like, Stanley was so bad at following directions that he decided to go to the break room and admire it, and then decides to go back to the door he was meant to go in. But you can go so off track that the narrator... this is a bold claim, but this is the best way to sum up the narrator of the Stanley Parable. It's like GLaDOS if she had control of the actual game, not just the puzzles. Because some of the situations I've ended up in this game, it's so comically amusing and just flat out bizarre. Like, there's one bit where I got so off track that he kept going, well, we're going to have to restart now. So he kept starting back at the start. So I got back to the room with the two doors and they were missing because he restarted it so much that he'd lost the story. So he had to go find the story. So I had to search these endless corridors and... like, the narrator was just like, yeah, ignore me, will you? And just literally fucks with you. Like,
oh, I really want to get this game.
There's another bit where, I'm not going to go into too many, because I think there's about 30 endings to this.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
One of the fun ones was I accidentally took a right into a room they told me not to go into, and it's the end of the main story. And he's like, oh, this is the spoiler. Why have you... oh, we've got to go out of this now. And it's like, if you were to play the game standard, like, just following the rules, it is a room that you reach, like, later on. But you just go into it, and it's just like, oh, come on, we've got to start now. I have got so off track on this game that he's like, oh, fine, you don't want to play my video game, do you? Well, let's go play someone else's. And it goes to a loading screen, and I ended up in Minecraft.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And I was just like, what on earth? And you can't do anything. It's not like it's a fully interactive Minecraft. Like, the narrator starts building a house, and is like, no, this house will not suffice. Go get me a diamond house. Go mining. And I go into the mines looking for diamonds like he requested. And then he's like, no, this won't do. Let's see what else we've got. I wake up in Portal. And I just don't know what was happening. I didn't really know
I can't afford any more games.
It's on Steam now. It's such an interesting game because it's one of those that, especially if you're a game designer, it questions the motives of what it means to be a video gamer, what it means to follow the rules and objectives that you set, and what it is to just goof off and just do what you want. And it's got a great sense of humour. The narrator is one of the best ones that I've had in a while because... the dialogue is really funny. He's really snarky and sarcastic. There is one part in the game where I died and had to repeat it, and it's involving like a little puzzle. But before he'd finished the dialogue, I'd finished the puzzle. So he goes, because Stanley was in such a rush to complete the game, like some kind of buffoon, let's just stay and relax and listen to some new age music. And the game just stops and he starts playing like whale song. And it's like, you need to calm down. And then, like, after a minute, it's like... and then the door opened. It's like, oh, I want to hit you. I want to hit you so much, narrator. But that's the Stanley Parable. You can pick it up on Steam. It's interesting. It's certainly interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I can't afford any more games. I got Pokemon Y this week.
Why? That's a good question.
Mostly for Heracross, which turns out I'm not going to use because I already have my fighting Pokemon and it's half Hawk, half Mexican wrestler, Hawlucha. It's the best Pokemon ever. It's the best Pokemon ever.
Luchador Pokemon.
It's half Hawk, half Luchador.
And it's a flying and fighting, and a lot of its moves involve like drop kicks and ankle
drops. Flying press. There's a move that's... it's the only move I've seen like this. It's a flying and fighting move. It's called a flying press.
Wow, so it's a multi-genre, multi-type move.
Yeah.
I've not seen that before. Me and either. I'm playing the game.
It says it's a fighting game, but if you read the description, it says it counts as a flying.
Okay, that's interesting. So let me see that again. Actually, there is another move. I got the one of the fossil types, which is a rock and ice, and it has an ice move, which normally ice I don't think is very effective against water, but this move is super effective against water. So they've changed the kind of strategy behind it. So, yeah.
But also in France, do you know what Horlicks' name is?
No.
Bruta Libre.
Oh my god, that is awesome.
But I've been in mine. It's a female.
See if you can actually get a French one over the Wonder Trade.
I was tempted to just rename it to Bruta Libre, but I realised I'd caught a female one, so I named her Saturine after the Chikara Luchadora.
That is possibly the most obscure and niche thing I've ever heard. I nicknamed a Pokemon after a Chikara wrestler.
All of my Pokemon I nicknamed after wrestlers, Sean.
I'm not surprised.
I've got a Lucario named CM Punk.
Okay. Straight edge Lucario.
Yeah, my Blastoise is called Andre. What do you expect? But that's not what I'm talking about this week. I might bring up some more next week because I only had it for a few days. My game of the week is obviously really The Wolf Among Us, Episode 1, Faith by Telltale Games. The Wolf Among Us is the first, or the Faith is the first episode of the series based on Bill Willingham's Babel's comic series. If you're aware of Grimm or Once Upon a Time, those are fucking rip-offs.
Yeah, Fables is the OG.
Yeah. Fables is about a bunch of fairy tale characters who were forced out of their story world into the real world.
What it reminds me of is Who Framed Roger Rabbit for fairy tale characters.
Yes.
Where they're living in a world where it's just the modern world.
Yeah, it's imagine if Toontown got overrun by dark forces and they all had to leave their lives behind and start new lives. But instead of Toontown, it's fairy tales.
And much like, from what I've seen of the Telltale game, much like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, it's very noir-esque as well.
This one especially because your main character is Bigby Wolf, who is the big bad wolf, but in human form.
It took me a while to click with the name as well. Bigby Wolf.
Big B Wolf.
Yeah, because someone like in the games, like early on, one of the characters goes, "You're not as bad as you think you are." I went, "He's a big bad wolf! How did I not see this?"
You know, I read the first like 100-odd issues of Fables. I'm trying to catch up. I'm aware of who all these characters are, which isn't great because I know who lives and who dies and.
You know their arcs, kind of.
I know Bigby Wolf and Snow White are in the comic that I read, and this is a prequel.
Yeah.
It's set in the 80s.
It's a good introduction to the story. Yeah. Like,
but I never really feel an overwhelming sense of dread for certain characters. But there's a lot of new characters as well. And as far as I'm aware, they are all still from fairy tales, but just less known fairy tales. And one of the rules of Fables is that you're alive as long as people still believe in your fairy tale, or as long as people still aware of your fairy tale.
Yeah,
someone like the big bad wolf is very hard to kill.
Yeah, the more popular characters, the stronger and more immune to violence.
But some of the characters you wouldn't really have heard of, and so they're a lot more expendable.
Yeah, they dug deep for some of them.
Yeah, really, really deep. I wasn't aware of some of them. But there's some good ones in it, like Mr. Toad is hilarious.
Oh, Jason Statham Toad.
Yeah. That's what Rocket Raccoon should be.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Rocket Raccoon should be.
Get the guy who voiced Mr. Toad in the Fables game.
But
get the fuck back inside.
It's a Telltale game, and it's very much like Walking Dead, so it's all decision based with the odd bit of quick time events.
But from what I've seen as well, the decisions seem to be a bit more like they have more of an impact from what I've seen of part one.
My biggest problem with the decisions and this is really, really pissing me off, is that in Walking Dead you could turn off the little thing at the top that says, "Should I remember that?"
So you can't do that.
You can't do that in Wolf Among Us, which really annoys me because I don't want to, I think I've said this before on the show.
You want it to feel more streamlined.
Yeah, I don't want to know which were the big decision and which were the little decisions.
Yeah, you don't want to know when you've just fucked up.
Yeah. I want all the decisions to match. If you don't know which ones are the big ones, they're all big ones.
Yeah, exactly. So there's more at stake when you've got to actually think you're doing something important. Like, every decision counts.
Yeah, so I just think it's really silly for them to not put that option in there. When you start off, all the selectables are highlighted. So everything you can interact with is highlighted, and I didn't like that, and you can turn that off. Because I don't want to know what's part of the background and what's something I need to be looking at. Because if I can see everything that I'm supposed to go investigate, it'll be a very short game.
Yeah, it's like being prodded along, like walked along.
So I still want to play the game, and especially with this, it's a detective game, it's an investigation.
So yeah, it's like L.A. Noire with fairy tales.
Yeah.
Without the facial thing, because it's really hard to determine the emotions of a toad.
But it's really hard to determine the emotions of someone in L.A. Noire as well.
True.
But the art style for this is gorgeous.
Oh, the first, I'll say panel, because the first bit where it just shows Fable Town, the shot is just, is this a motion comic? Because it just looks exactly like the art style of the books.
Yeah, it's beautifully, beautifully put together. It kind of reminds me of, motion comics is a good one, but you know when you look at something on a 3DS, and there's like different depth of fields.
Yeah,
there is I really like Disney Pixar 3D films, because Pixar 3D films aren't about coming out at you; they're about sinking, like pushing things further back and making things look like they're on different levels.
Like the color palette, like creates a depth to everything in the world, and it makes it feel like you're going into this fantasy world.
Yeah, it looks great. The voice acting's great. Even like the QuickTime events are dynamic and interesting visually. Yeah. It's not just an X will come up on the screen. The X will come up on the screen in like a big dramatic way. That's part of the art.
Yeah, like I've played the first bit of this game. I'm not going to mention what part it is, but if you played this, you will know.
I think you can say it's like a fight scene.
Yeah, there's a fight scene early on, where because these characters are so kind of immune to dying, it definitely gets pretty violent with some of them. Like, the fight goes on for a while, and you destroy each other. So it could potentially get even gorier than The Walking Dead.
Well, there was one thing I had an option to do that I said no to, but I was like, I could do that, that'd be pretty grim. No pun intended.
Just beat me to mentioning that.
But my one problem with the QuickTime events is I was in a chase scene, and it was prompting me to press like L2 or R2. But it wasn't telling me what I needed to press until like it didn't give me enough time. I know it's QuickTime.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough.
I can imagine this sort of gameplay will be quite difficult for someone who's not actually previously played a Telltale game.
Yeah, like, I do feel that.
You have to be aware of how to play a game like this, because it's part point and click, but it's also part quick time. So you need to know when a command pops up, you need to know how to activate that command. And they can be a little unclear sometimes, because it's just, what does L1, R1 mean? Do I have to press both? Do I have to press them in sequence?
Well, it's not so much quick time. It's, you know, like in Walking Dead, where you have a set amount of time to put your cursor over. So, say, for example, this isn't something that happens. Well, say, for example, you're being choked and there's a bottle to your right.
You've got to move.
You've got to move the cursor over to the bottle and then press like R2 and it'll grab it and smash him.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing I'm talking about more than QuickTime. So that sort of thing's happening. And so that happened, and I was running down this hallway and there's a window. So I saw, he's running down this hallway, I have to get the cursor over to the window and then press the button. So I got the cursor over to the window. He reached the window, and it wasn't until he reached the window that it said either L2 or R2, and I didn't know which one it was going to be out of the two. So you just have to guess. But those are some very small criticisms of a very fun game. It's got a lot of depth. There's additional Book of Fables entries if you want to learn more about the characters. I was speaking to our friend Niall, and he played it before I had a chance to. And the one question I always ask people with stuff like this is, are you interested in reading the comics? And he said definitely.
It is a very good way to get people into the actual original material.
Because that's something I'm always really interested in with the Avengers, because the statistic I was pointing to is after the Avengers came out, comic sales stayed the same, but shawarma sales went way up.
Yeah. I have an example. Whenever people talk about the Dark Knight Nolan trilogy, I just say, well, would this get you on to read the comics? And people look at you like you've said a dirty word, still, yeah, to this day. It's like, the comics are better stories than a lot of the movies. Please, can you at least give it a go before kind of criticising everything?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense to us, but it's a hell of a segue. And we both have the same comic this week once again.
It's slightly unsurprising because it's back, Kieran.
It's been so hard.
I'd be mad because it took a while, but oh my god, those puppy dog eyes won me back over. It's back and I'm so happy.
Hawkeye number 13. Thank you, Matt Fraction, David Arha, Matt Hollingsworth, Chris Eliopoulos. Thank you for coming back into my life. Thank you for giving me this.
It felt so long since I read the last book. And yeah, it's only been
Which was the last issue? Was it the Barton one?
It was the annual one that they did
Kate
Bishop. But that was a good 6-7 weeks ago now, I believe. Yeah. But it throws you straight back in because
It kind of throws you straight back to before the last few issues and kind of catches you up.
Yeah, because if you've been following Hawkeye, and we have talked about it on the show
a lot.
Yeah, the past 3 or 4 books in the series
haven't been from Clint's perspective.
No, they've been from different points of perspective. They've been different points of view with different characters, but it's all the same events.
Yeah,
which surround the tragic death of one of our favourite side characters.
Rest in peace, Grills.
Opening the first page and it mentions him. I was like, oh my god, I forgot. No! Never forget.
Well, I think it says it on the very intro before you get to the comic.
Yeah, it's brutal how it says it.
Yeah, last time they killed Grills. As if we could forget.
Lest we forget.
Lest we forget.
And the other issues, you've had the issue from Pizza Dog, aka Lucky. You had the issue from Barney Barton, who is Clint's
Trickshot.
Yeah, he's his brother. And then you had
The villain. The clown.
And you also had, like, it touched upon it briefly in Kate Bishop's annual. Yeah. But that appears to be kind of alongside this book as well.
Yeah.
Where we finally get Clint's perspective on the topic. And wow, what a heartfelt issue this is.
Yeah, it's called The U in Funeral.
Yeah, because this is Clint dealing with the death of Grills. And there is one page in particular where the character was originally introduced, I think it was issue 7, the Hurricane Katrina, where Grills' father shows up. And he's kind of a comical character, and you've not seen him since. In this, there's no words to the panels. It's just Clint walking up to him, and they just look at each other, and he just hugs him. And I'm like, oh my god, how do you get so much emotion in the drawings and the paneling? It's perfect. It really is.
Yeah, it's because he's having such a rough time of it as well. Because he's writing, it starts off with him writing a letter to his ex-girlfriend. Then he goes to fight with the Avengers alongside his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, and I love the sense of awkwardness that they depict through the book where he's like, are you alright? And she's like, I'm fine. And then just walks off.
Yeah, and then he gets home and his neighbour's been killed.
Yeah, like, may I just add, I love how Clint gets the call from the Avengers. You'd imagine some kind of huge, like, there's not a symbol in the sky, there's not some massive sign from, like, a fire jet or out. There's nothing high technical. He literally gets paged. Yeah, it just says Avengers.
He's got beeper.
He just says Avengers.
Well, he says he doesn't have the internet.
And it goes through a lot of the stuff that's been covered. Like, you've seen a lot of the panels from the perspectives of the other books. Like, there's the bit where he meets Barney. There's the bit where he's talking where you couldn't understand it from the Pizza Dog perspective. Yeah. Like, it's elaborated on what the dialogue actually was.
Yeah, you even see, like, the tracks of Dracula's go to his building and you don't see what happens to them because Barney happened to them.
Yeah, like, he walks out and he just sees a Reebok trainer. He's just like, okay, that's weird. But this is the first issue where I've generally found the tracksuit Dracula's actually quite scary as well, because there's the bit at the Grill's funeral where they're stood watching and one of them just goes, all it'd take is just now. Like, yeah, if we could just kill him now. And it's like, okay, these are actually quite threatening, and they're not the joke that they originally started out to be. Mm-hmm. You're just reading the book.
Yeah, it's... I can't wait to see where this goes.
Yeah, because this is a pretty... It's dark in the best emotional kind of way.
I love that the conversation with Kate happens from the perspective of Barney being on the loo.
Yeah.
It's just... everything about it is one of the most perfect put together.
Like, where he just walks back into Barney and just goes, she took my dog. Like, yeah.
And then Barney just says it looks like the dog left.
Yeah. But it ends on a really, really interesting note where...
just Clint alone on top of his building.
Yeah. It's... the art is, again, phenomenal. They've really... like, we talked about Hawkeye number one, and that book grabbed our attention. This is a whole nother beast, yeah, right now.
Every page is a 9-panel grid.
Yeah.
Do you know how hard 9-panel grids are to do? Like, Watchmen was a 9-panel grid comic.
Yeah.
This is...
there's no other way to describe Hawkeye at the minute. This is probably one of the best things you could read in any fiction.
Absolutely recommend it more than... it's the best comic.
Yeah.
It's the best comic being put out right now. It's undeniable. Yeah. That Daredevil
saga,
Ice X-Men Legacy, and a lot of people don't agree.
You have to buy it. It's compulsory if you're a fan of any form of comic book. If you're a fan of the Avengers movie, buy the Hawkeye.
It's another thing. Everyone loves the Avengers movie. No one's reading Hawkeye.
People are idiots. That's why. Well. Admittedly, Avengers is not the best representation of Hawkeye.
If you come into Hawkeye, if you're thinking, I know who Hawkeye is, nope.
No, you don't.
What you need to do is go to www.enthusiacast.com, read the first part of my source material on the Avengers.
Oh, we're getting to the plug stage.
And then you'll know who Hawkeye is. So I think that's another excellent segue by myself. So where can we find you online, Sean?
Everyone can find me on Facebook and on Twitter at @S_Keeney. And also find me at rantover.wordpress.com.
Is that not Rantover UK?
It is rantoveruk.wordpress. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at @S_Keeney. And you can also find me at rantoveruk.wordpress.com, where I occasionally watch films and write about it.
You can find myself by going to about.me/KingImpulse. Facebook, Twitter, all the podcasts, everything I write is all on there. Tumblrs, Instagrams, Last.fms. You can go to www.enthusiacast.com. That's where everything is.
Everything.
You go to the About page and find that stuff that we just talked about. Links to it right there. Go to the Subscribe page. Go link straight to iTunes. We're now on Stitcher Radio, which is another great way you can find the show. We're on Podomatic at podomatic.enthusiacast.com. We're on Twitter at Enthusiacast. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Enthusiacast. There's links to all that on Enthusiacast.com.
We are an empire online at the moment.
If you get a chance to leave us a rating or a review, we do really, really appreciate it. It's how we get those new listeners.
Trickling in.
Yeah, if you are a new listener, please let us know. Let us know what you think. And I think that's it.
I think that wraps everything up. Yeah. Just that stay tuned, because we've both got some really interesting stuff in the pipeline. Yeah. But for the enthusiast, he's Kieran Shack, I'm Sean Keeney, and that's us for this week. Goodbye, thanks for listening.